Matthew 14, reading from verse 22 through to the end. Jesus has just fed the people, 5,000 people. And we read this. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. After he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. During the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went out to them walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "It's a ghost," they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid." "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you on the water." "Come," he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came towards Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and, beginning to sink, cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You of little faith," he said, "why did you doubt?" And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." When they had crossed over, they landed at Gennesaret. And when the men of that place recognized Jesus, he sent word to all the surrounding country. People brought all their sick to him and begged him to let the sick just touch the edge of his cloak. And all who touched him were healed. Over this summer, if you've been living in London, I must confess the weather's been pretty miserable over this summer. It's been not too bad the past couple of days, but it's just been grey and bleak. The weather doesn't usually get me down, but this summer's just been the pits. But one good thing has been sport. I must confess, it's just cheered me up, this whole. If it wasn't for this, boy, I think I'd be getting serious counselling. It's just been so miserable. But this has been good. Football was good, and the Olympics were great, although they were cancelled from the previous year. I thoroughly enjoyed that. They were so good. And then with the Tour de France, and then if you were watching the TV last night, Emma Raducanu, if you were excited by that, that's just a fairy tale, the way that's just gone through qualification all the way right through, and she conducted herself so well, played like a champ. If you're watching usually Andy Murray, especially if you're Scottish, you've heart attack after heart attack, disappointment after disappointment. You just seem to ride on the crest of a wave with Emma. They just seem to be too easy in many ways, but that's these things really, really cheer us up. But the thing that always encourages me the most is this, the Paralympics. I watched quite a few of the races in the Paralympics, and I always find it quite emotional because usually, in fact, every single time, without exception, whenever they interviewed somebody, they didn't just say, "Congratulations, you won a gold medal or a silver medal or a bronze medal." They would say, "How hard has it been? How hard has it been for you to get to this point?" And then the tears would come, and then they're crying, and then back to the studio, they're crying. And you didn't get this in the ordinary Olympics. You almost got a kind of a bravado with them. "Well, I should have won the gold and I won the silver, and I could have done better." Almost pride and arrogance with some of the able-bodied, shall we call them. But when it came to the Paralympics, if they won a bronze, they rejoiced in it. It was hard. It was a hard slog. Life has been hard for them. They're filled with tears, and it was a struggle just to persevere. They would say the past few years, or the past 8-16 months, has been hard, but I've achieved something. It's been worth it. Life, in many ways, is like that. It's great when things are going well, but sometimes things come upon us that take the wind out of ourselves, and we have to struggle on. If you're only on this planet for 20 minutes, you will realize that life is a struggle. We are made of the dust of the ground. We are dust, and to the dust we will return. At best, we're dust. And life is a struggle. It's a struggle from the cradle to the grave. The ground is being cursed. It's filled with thorns and thistles. We have to work. We have aches and pains. Things impinge upon us. And life is a struggle. It's a struggle if you're a Christian as well. And that is what we're looking at this morning. We are continuing our series, this wee summer series that we began at the start of August, called The Invitations of Jesus. You are invited. Looking at, there are not many, but there are verses in the scriptures where Jesus specifically says, at a certain time, to people, come. Come to me. And let me just remind you what some of those were. Come to the wedding banquet. Remember that appeal. Everything is prepared. A king prepares a wedding banquet for his son. Come. Come to that. Speaking of future glory in heaven, everything is prepared. That great call. Then we looked at come and follow me. The cost of discipleship. The rich young ruler. I have sold everything. I have done this. I've obeyed all the commandments. And Jesus says, go and sell and give your money to the poor. He was very rich. Jesus says, come and follow me. He refused the cost of discipleship. Come and follow me. He's worthy of following. He is the Lord. He is worthy of all praise. His teaching is desirable. He is attractive in his person. He offers heaven and eternal glory. And today, interesting hearing about Turkey, not many followers. But in the world, there are many followers of Jesus. And down through history, he's got more likes than anybody's ever had. He is very popular. And although he is despised still by some. And then then we looked at come and get some rest. Come to me, you who are weary and burdened, and find rest. That time in life when we need to rest in him spiritually. Knowing him as a Lord and Savior, the search for spiritual rest ends with Jesus. You won't find it in Muhammad or Buddha or anything else. You find rest in Jesus. Until we find him, we don't have that rest. But we need rest physically as well. Come apart and rest a while. We looked at that. And then last week, Johan, come and share in the Master's happiness. Remember that? You well done, you good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a few things. I will make you faithful over much. Come and enter into your Master's happiness. What an incentive to use the gifts and abilities that God has given us to come and to make him happy, to rejoice in his happiness. We looked at that. Now, we come to a very real thing, and it's an invitation by Jesus to walk with him in the midst of the storms of life. That is the invitation that he gives to Peter. The storm is brewing. Peter, impulsive Peter, wants to walk on the waves. It's not all going calm at this point. Lord, if it's really you, call me to come to you. And in one word, Jesus just says, come. And this is the invitation. It's a big invitation that we look at. It's a very real invitation. And if it's not applicable to you today, it will be applicable to you often. In the storms of life that will surely come your way, here is an invitation of Jesus not to take those things away necessarily, but to come with him in the midst of these storms and to walk with him. And that's what I want us to look at this morning. Jesus has stilled the storm, and basically people are wondering who Jesus is. And through the feeding of the 5,000, which has come just before this, and the stilling of this storm, the disciples cry, truly you are the Son of God. Matthew records these two incidents in Matthew 14 for a reason. The disciples have to grow in the knowledge of Jesus. In the feeding of the 5,000, they discover that he is truly the Son of God. Old Testament overtones of God who supplies food in the wilderness. He can provide for us. But in this account, He can not only provide for us, He can protect us. He can lead us and He can guide us. And this is what the disciples are learning. And it's often through the difficulties of life that you and I will make the biggest progress in our faith. It's not with the sun shining down on us where we're flip-flops on and we're sangria. It's the time when the winds come. It is through these that you grow. As the treadmill makes you stronger and the weights require effort, build up your muscles. There is no shortcut to becoming a spiritual giant in the Lord apart from the trauma and the trials of life. So here then is an opportunity, an invitation by Jesus to come and don't be afraid in the midst of life's difficulties. Don't be afraid. Lord, if it's you, tell me to come to you. Come. In the midst of fear, in the midst of anxiety, here is an invitation to come to Jesus. And I pray in the things that I'm going to say that this will come to you. So I want to note five things very quickly this morning. They all begin with the letter C. First of all, in this passage, we see change. You will notice in this passage three times something changes. And you notice the change by the word immediately. Something happens and then immediately something else happens. And it changes your situation. Verse 22, immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat. The context is this, John the Baptist, right at the start of chapter 14, has been beheaded. Jesus, on hearing this, seeks to withdraw to a solitary place to pray, because John the Baptist's death signals opposition for him. He needs to find a place to pray, to draw close to the Lord. However, the people see him, they follow him, he ends up feeding 5,000 people. And then, Jesus makes, after he feeds them, he makes the disciples get into the boat ahead of him. Now, I want you to know that Jesus is the prime mover in this. The disciples are there, they're seeing the miracle, you think they would just party on. But Jesus immediately, their situation changes, they're made to get into a boat. Jesus says, get into the boat, off you go, I'll follow you up. Two reasons for that, perhaps. One is because he still hasn't had the chance to pray. He wants this time alone with his Father, so he sends them. The other reason is this, in John's account, after the feeding of the 5,000, they want to make Jesus king, something the disciples would have loved. So he sends them away, and Jesus goes away. It's not why he came. So this is the first of three immediates here. Something changed, a sudden change, and the sudden change is simply this. They are placed inside a boat. And you and I know what happens to the boat going across the lake. This is a life-changing, life-threatening situation that Jesus put them in. Jesus told them to get into the boat. Did he say, whoopsie, I wish I never done that. While I'm up here praying, you're having a real hard time. Was the Lord careless? Is he careless when he does these things? He does this. He places himself. And while Jesus dismisses the crowd and goes to pray, all is not well with the disciples. Change has come into their life, brought about by Jesus. Look at verse 24. They are buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. And then shortly before dawn, Jesus goes out to them. The word buffeted here means tormented. It's a similar word that's used of demon oppression. It's the same word. Really tormented. This thing is really getting on their goat. They're really trying to row across this lake. We're told, even some of the facts here, they were a considerable distance, not only from land, but from Jesus. They really are in a difficult situation here. This considerable distance is many stadia. A stadium is 600 foot long. And the disciples, John tells us, had rowed 25 to 30 stadia. They had rowed about 3 to 4 miles. The lake is about 5 or 6 miles wide. So they're still a couple of miles away from the other side. But they've been rowing for this length of time. They're really well into this. They've rowed all night. This wind has come up, which is not uncommon in that place. Suddenly, arise. And after the meal, they should have been there long ago. Their plans have been scuppered. And they're in this life-threatening, life-changing situation. They've been there all night. And they are very weary. They have no strength and no energy. And in the midst of the scary situation, Jesus appears and they think it's a ghost. They start to scream. They are anxious. They are terrified. "It's a ghost," they said, and cried out in fear. And this is what the Lord sometimes does in our life as Christians. Sometimes we are in control. We have it all planned and what we're going to do. But often, sudden change comes. I must confess, I never liked the status quo. I get bored quite easy. I never like things just the same. And yet, I don't like change either. How unsettling is that? That when something unsettling or unpleasant happens, especially if this change is unpleasant, I'd rather go back to what I had before. I don't like change. As creatures, we don't often like change, especially if it's unpleasant and outside of our control. And that is where the disciples are, through no fault of their own. They're in this boat in the midst of the sea, in the midst of this lake. And Jesus brought this about. We must not note this. He is in control. What appears to be accidents to us, things don't happen by accident. The Lord does not slumber nor sleep. When things happen to us, he's not like the gods of Baal. You have to cry out, "Don't you see? Don't you hear?" He sees, he hears, he sees and knows all things. And when things don't make sense, he is still behind us. And he sometimes brings change about. And it happens many times in your life. And the Lord will sometimes allow this to happen. But it's often in our darkest moments that Jesus comes to us. That's why, look what it says here. On the fourth watch, depending on the version you're using, some versions talk about just before dawn. The Romans divided up the time into four watches. The Jews divide up time into three watches. This is the fourth watch. Matthew's obviously using the Roman system here. The watches start from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. in quarters. Jesus appears in the fourth quarter, sometime between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. Some commentators, some versions say, just before dawn. And if you know the saying, that it's darkest just before dawn. I think that's an astronomical thing or whatever. The way that it works is dark, 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 just before dawn. It seems to get darker and then the dawn appears. I don't know. But Jesus appears when it's darkest, in the fourth watch, not 20 minutes after they set off, but perhaps a long time, hours perhaps, we don't know. He probably didn't send them off at 2 in the morning when he dismissed the crowds, and he was a long time praying. They'd been on there for hours, hours, suffering in this way. And Jesus comes to them at the darkest time. During the fourth watch. Jesus knows, can I just say this? Jesus knows the boat that we are in. We're all in a boat. Some of you may be now in a boat that's stormy and tempest, and you don't like it. And you think it's happened by accident, but the Lord is sovereign. Some of you may be on a wee boat that's steaming away, eating your nettle, and living the dream. Note this, and you know this, life is not always like that. Life is hard. The waves are rough at times. And there'll be times you'll feel your boat is about to be submerged. But note this, the disciples were in the place where Jesus had placed them. And as much as we don't like to admit it, unless we're sinning against God, and even then, he sometimes allows us to go into the dark place that he might bring us out. So first of all, change. Change will come about in our life. And the Lord is still sovereign over those things. But then we see another change that comes. Jesus into the situation in the fourth watch, when all is dark and all hope is lost, Jesus walks on the water and he comes to them immediately. He says to them, when they cry out, he doesn't leave them in this condition. Immediately, he cries out, take courage, it is I, don't be afraid. How we need those times in our life. This second sudden change, at this time for their good, for their comfort, quick comfort that can come. So reassuring to know that the Lord can do this with us through his word, through circumstances, through other people. He knows how to quickly comfort us when we need comforting. However, they had good reason to be comforted. I mean, we know, first of all, into this situation, the Lord's presence is with them. It is I. Some commentators have said this is a claim of divinity. Possibly, but I'm sure the disciples at this time don't realize that. They just see Jesus as one whom they're familiar with. But God is uniquely present in Jesus. He is with them. He wants to put them at ease. He is in their situation. They had already seen Jesus stilling a storm. But the last time, Jesus was in the boat with them. Lord, don't you care? I think it's Matthew 8. Don't you care that we perish? You're sleeping. This time, it's different. It's not the same. The situations when the Lord changes, when the Lord works, are always different. You never get the same thing. And this is different. Jesus isn't there this time. They can't wake him up and say, don't you care? They're thinking, well, the last time Jesus was with us, he's not with them this time. But he comes to them now and his presence is very real. Jesus is in the storm. I must confess, I just thrilled at this. It's one thing to have Jesus in the boat with you. It's another thing when he's actually in the storm. He's standing in the storm. He's walking on the storm. He's not in the boat with you all cozy and wrapped up, having a drink from the bar and looking at the scenery. I'm glad Jesus is not just in my boat, but he is in the storm, whatever's causing my grief and my heartache and my misery. He's there. And that's what he does. The peace doesn't, he doesn't just say nothing and step straight into the boat. He's standing in the storm, holding a conversation, certainly with Peter. Note this new development. Jesus comes to them in the storm, stands in the midst of the storm with them. And it's there, he says to them, it is I. If you ever, whatever you're going through, and we're hearing about Andrew and Debbie and others, times in your life where a dark cloud comes, the Lord is with you. He says, it is I. It is I. He comes with words of comfort. The other reason why they shouldn't have been afraid, not only is the Lord with them, the Lord has been praying. I think in this passage you're meant to see the connection between the Lord's prayer and now his presence. He's been spending the night in prayer. He sent them away in a boat. He would have been praying for them, amongst other things. Their fear was unfounded. The Lord was there. Therefore, he is able to save completely those who come to God through him, because he always lives to intercede. Don't you know the Lord will intercede for you, whatever you're going through on Monday and Tuesday? He ever lives to intercede. His work for you isn't finished. God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. Psalm 46, verse 1. Jesus has already been praying for them. The fact that he meets them in the fourth watch meant that he must have spent a long time in prayer. A long time. He's praying for them. His presence is now with them. His timing is perfect. Jesus immediately says to them, he doesn't dilly-dally. He knows how much they can take. Take courage, don't be afraid. You don't need to be afraid. He's never late when we need him. The other reason was the situation. As I said, Jesus had orchestrated this. It didn't catch him by surprise. They were at the center of his will. One of the commentators says this: if it is a result of obedience to Christ's command that the church or an individual Christian is in a situation of danger or distress, then there is no need to fear. When the Lord has placed you in that situation, allowed things to happen, there is no need to fear. If we are disobedient and run from the Lord or sinning, we have every right to be fearful and we need to return back to the Lord. But where we are at the centre of the Lord's will, no storm should make us fearful. Therefore, he comforts them because of who he is, it is I, because of his work in our daily lives. He makes us do certain things because of his prayer for us and because of his timing. Immediately, John, don't be anxious. He comes to us with the right words at the right time. Thirdly, it doesn't end there. Come. This isn't the end of the incident. You'd have thought this is how it would have finished. Gets into the boat. Peter adds drama to this. If it was me, I'd have just went, glad that's finished. But you've got to admire Peter. His temperament, he's quite... I don't know whether it was his temper. I don't know why he stepped out, why he wanted to step outside the boat. I think it was you and I that just went, oh, I'm glad that's finished. But this is a massive lesson. What a challenge this is. Peter is both an example of great faith and lack of faith at the same time. He sees this situation. And unlike you and I, he's not content just to be comforted. Sometimes that's all we want, isn't it? We want the verse, the soft verse, the peace, the calm, the warm fuzzies. We need this. We really need this. But Peter's not content with that. In the excitement of the moment, I don't know if his temperament thinking, here's something exciting. I wouldn't mind doing that. I would love to walk in water. Yeah, give me a piece of that. We don't know what made him do this. But perhaps it's simply this. He wanted to come towards Jesus. He wanted to be where Jesus was. He wasn't content to just be in the boat and thank the Lord that it's all finished. He wanted to step outside the boat and be where Jesus is. Beware of ever stepping outside the boat or taking might because of temperament. Your temperament and faith are not the same thing. You might be brave and foolhardy. It's not the same as saying you have great faith. You might step out and think, what have I done? I've stepped outside the will of the Lord. This wasn't God's will for me. But when the Lord says, come, that's quite a different thing. And that's what's happening here. He wants to get closer. So he says, Lord, if it's you, tell me to come to you on the water. Not just cause me to do the same thing. Tell me to come to you. Cause me to come to you. And this is something that's very commendable to the Lord. The Lord encourages this. So he says, come. One word. It's in the Greek, it's basically meaning start to come. Take those steps and start to come towards me. Do this. And Peter does this. He steps outside the boat. The Lord... desire is to comfort us. Know this in our trouble. He knows how to do it. He can do it immediately. He can change your situation. He can change your joy. He can do these things quickly. But he wants to enable us as Christians at times not to rejoice that it's all over, but to step outside the boat into the storm with him. That's the difference. Peter is safer outside the boat with Jesus than he is inside the boat with the other 11. He's safer. You're always safer with Jesus in the midst of a storm than outside of the boat, than inside the boat without Jesus. And Peter does this. He gets out and he walks on the water. Jesus wants us to walk with him in the midst of it. It's a valuable, valuable lesson. To know that in the midst, if you can learn this in life, and you will constantly be learning this from now to the grave, that the storm with Jesus is not a fearful thing. It can be scary, yes, at a human level, but the Lord invites us to walk with him in this. And Peter is excited at the prospect of drawing close to Jesus in the midst of the storm. He's, for that moment, he doesn't see the wind and the waves. He just sees Jesus, and he wants Jesus. And he's prepared to step outside the boat, regardless of what the weather is like. And he does this. He does this, and he starts off well, and he moves towards Jesus. We don't know how far he walked, but he must have got almost there, because when he sinks, Jesus just reaches out his hand. Jesus didn't sprint across the water to him. He must have got some way, 10 feet, 20 feet, we don't know. He starts off well, but then he begins to sink. Why does he sink? Because he takes his eyes off the Lord and he sees the wind and he becomes afraid. He begins in the midst of this. He starts off well, great faith. The Lord's in the midst of storm, doesn't matter, I'm wanting the Lord. But at some point during this, and this is a common Christian experience, isn't it? You get the verse on Monday morning that's going to see you through to Thursday or Friday, and then Monday afternoon, your soul's in your boots again and you're beginning to doubt. Why? Because your mind starts to go back to the problem and you start to pick at it and unravel it and consider that more than Jesus, and that becomes bigger than Jesus. It becomes threatening. And Peter feels the wind. He feels the swell. The spray is now beginning to happen. He's getting a wake-up call. And he's suddenly realizing, what am I doing? I wish I was back in the boat. And he begins to sink. It's very real. His failure to concentrate was his lack of faith. He's distracted by the circumstances again, and he takes his eyes off the Lord. It's quite something, isn't it? It's one thing to faith to step outside the boat. It's another thing to have faith to walk in the midst of a storm. That's quite something. That is the challenge in this passage, isn't it? That is what should cause us to, wow, Lord, give me that faith that causes me not to say, Lord, change the situation. Yes, change it. It's too much, and the Lord might do that. He does this. He eventually calms the storm by his presence, not by his word. Only when he goes in the boat does things change. But Jesus comes. And the danger is we can analyze things too much and take our eyes off the Lord. There's a great verse in Psalm 131, isn't it? My heart is not proud, Lord, my eyes are not haughty. I do not concern myself with great matters or things too wonderful for me. Christians try and analyze things too much. That's what gets us. That's what makes the situation worse. That's what causes us to sink and sink and sink. Whenever I go as a pastor or as an elder to somebody, I'm going with the word of God. I'm not going with my advice. I go with the word of God. But you can often tell the people who aren't, they're going through a hard time and they don't have the word of God to stabilize their thinking, all that they will talk for an hour about their problem. This is my problem. I've analyzed it. I've looked at it. I've picked it up. I've looked at it so many ways. In other words, Peter could analyze the waves. He could conduct a lecture on wave theology or whatever. He should have been looking at Jesus. You and I can talk much about our ailments or aches and pains or situation. But can we talk much about the Lord and fix our eyes upon him? I wonder if we want to live outside the boat with Jesus. Or do we want to remain in the boat, comfortable? The Lord would sometimes challenge us. Do we have the faith like Peter? Lord, if it's you, Lord, I'd rather be where you are in the midst of the storm than here. Here is an invitation, encouraged by the Lord, to Peter, come. Come in the midst of the storm. Come to where I am. I'm in the midst of the storm. Come to me. And Peter comes. But what happens when we fail? And that's what we often do, isn't it? Sometimes we walk with the Lord in the storm. Life is hard, Lord. I'm back Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I'm still downcast. I'm weary, Lord. And if I'm honest, Lord, my faith is the size of a mustard seed. I'm beginning to sink. I don't like what's happening. Lord, I'm flesh and bone. I'm really struggling. I'm finding this hard. What happens next is this. The Lord knows how to catch us. And the third and final immediate in this is Peter then cries out, Lord, save me. Even in our best moments, when we do walk with the Lord in the midst of the storm, we still feel we're sinking. Lord, my faith is failing. I'm struggling. Lord, I'm really struggling with this situation. And we're sinking. Immediately, the Lord can reach out our hand and grab us. He could have simply spoke a word to Peter. But it must have been so encouraging for Peter to feel the grip of Jesus, to feel his hand gripping him, very real presence. And that's what happened. As I said, we don't know how far he got, but he must have been near him. And here is an important lesson. You want to be caught by Jesus. You want to remain not sinking. Endeavour to remain so close to Jesus that he just reaches out. He can reach out and just grab you because you're reading his word. And the verse is only 1 foot away from your eyes. That's how close you are to the Lord. And that verse can then be applied to you and he just catches you again with that verse. Be close to the Lord. Endeavour daily. That is your responsibility. Peter walked. He wanted to be close to Jesus. If you want the Lord to catch you and not keep you afloat when you feel you're sinking, keep reading. Keep praying. Meet with God's people. Walk in obedience. Use the means of grace that the Lord has given. The wind stopped for all the disciples, not because Jesus said the wind had to stop. He simply got in the boat. He was near to them. And when he went into the boat, when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Remain close to him. Finally, changed. Their situation changed, and as a result, they were changed. Whenever your situation changes, it's because the Lord wants to change you. That's what this is all about. The Lord knows this is all going to happen. Their situation's changed. He brought it about. He made them get in the boat. He comes to them. He comforts them. He catches them. And as a result, they are changed. We are supposed to grow in our faith. And that's what they needed. That's what happened here. They grew. They learned something about themselves. Although Peter was caught, he received a gentle rebuke. You of little faith. Why did you doubt? Isn't this the case when the Lord catches you? The Lord's caught me many times. Lord, I'm sorry I doubted. I was anxious. I cried out. I was troubled. I spoke rashly. And then when the Lord changes the situation, you feel ashamed. Lord, I wish my faith was stronger. And he says to you, oh, John, you of little faith. Why did you doubt? That I can meet your needs, I can supply your needs. Why did you doubt? And you grow in knowledge of yourself. But at the same time, you grow in your knowledge of him. That's what's happening here. You grow in your knowledge of Jesus. Here is this. People are wondering in Matthew's gospel to this point. They're wondering. They now have a new creed. Look at verse 33. Then after all of this, the sent away in the boat and various things, and this trouble and all that's happened, then those who were in the boat worshipped him. Truly, you are the Son of God. They've seen him feed 5,000. He can provide. Now they've witnessed his protection. And that's the conclusion they come to. I wonder if you've grown in your faith in the Lord, whether your creed has become greater. Not just that you know knowledge up here, but your creed has worked its way into your life. You know he is the Son of God. And that's what happens here. That's how the story ends. This faith, this great faith. Look at this example of these people who just bring their people out. It says if they can just touch him, Just let them touch the corner of your garment, Jesus. Remember Nazareth, they had no faith in Jesus. His own town. And in this place, just brush his garment. Simple as that. That's how impressive Jesus, that's his power. And they were coming, and all who just touched the hem of his garment were healed. The Lord wants us to reach out and touch him by faith. In the midst of a storm, in the midst of sickness and illness, to touch him by faith. To draw close to him in faith. The Lord works daily in our lives to teach us about ourselves and himself. Note that that is always his agenda. He does this by change. And that can be immediately. He makes something happen. But during that time, in that situation, he knows how to immediately comfort us when we need it. Take courage in the midst of this, John. It is I, don't be afraid. But he wants us to continue to walk with him in the midst of the storm often. Sometimes the storm can end there, sometimes it can go on a bit. Come, he says, come to me outside the boat. I'm in the storm, but come to me. It's not easy. The Lord always, it's difficult to walk by faith. But when we do and we make progress, that's great. But we will sink at times. And immediately he can catch us and cause us to stand. And when he does these things, we will be changed on a daily, monthly, yearly basis. I wish I could bring you up and you could give your testimony of how the dark times the Lord took you from here to here, from doubt to faith, to wondering if he's truly the Son of God, to truly you are the Son of God. And you think you've arrived only for next week something else to happen that causes you to doubt that he is the Son of God. We are so fickle. We are so weak and so frail. We're on a journey of faith with the Lord. It's not easy. It's a struggle like the Paralympians. It's not easy to win a gold medal from the Lord and to stand. But he's able to make us stand. Because he who began a good work in us will bring it through to completion.